Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the weekly Thursday morning edition of the Household Express, a program dedicated to all your homemaking needs. I am Sister Amara and delighted to be in your company up to 11 a.m. this morning. Well, lots and lots to look forward to in today's program. And today's lineup, or what you can look forward to, is, well, firstly, our topic of discussion today is on cross-contamination in foods. And today I'm so delighted to have a guest in the studio joining me. And my special guest in the studio is Chef Zakia Takari. Assalamu alaikum, Zakia. How are you? Welcome to the program. And Jazakallah for coming to the studio and joining me for the program.
Wa alaikum salam. How are you, Sister Amara? Jazakallah for having me. It's only a pleasure.
Certainly nice to have a guest in the studio again after a very, very long time. Yes, I know Marhuma Khadija, Auntie Khadija Ibrahim, used to sit on the left-hand side of me, and Auntie Hawa, my co-host, who used to co-host with me, used to sit where you are sitting right now. So I'm quite delighted to have you in the studio again with me. Jazakallahu khair. What are we going to be talking about? Cross-contamination. You know, when you're shopping for your food, your meat, your chicken, your fish, when putting food in the fridge, your meat in the fridge, when preparing, we're going to talk about cutting boards, your workspace cleanliness, when marinating food, your fruit and veggies, when serving food as well. And then a recipe you're going to look forward to in today's program is also courtesy of Zakia. It's a lemon cheesecake recipe. And we're also going to be talking a little bit towards the end of the program, halal friendly. Now, as far as I'm concerned and Zakia is concerned, there is no such a thing as halal friendly. It's either halal or haram. But I'm going to tell you a bit more about that much later on in the program. Well, I'm going to actually have an open line today for any of your cooking or baking questions or concerns. We have a chef in the studio today, and she will, inshallah, hope and try and answer your cooking or baking questions or concerns. 072-786-1548 is the number to dial. Zakia, where did you find your passion for food? How did the love start?
So, as a child, my mother was always in the kitchen. We always had homemade stuff, whether it was from food or baking, to your tarts, your desserts, etc. And always in the kitchen with her. That's where I started. 9 years old, I made my first cake with my mother. And from there, I started making my biscuits and my desserts and learning to cook. And that's where my journey started. I suppose with it being my go-to thing at any odd time, be it the morning, be it the evening, be it the middle of the night, you can't sleep. It became something I fell in love with, and eventually it was something that I seen myself doing in all circumstances and in any situation. So it's the career path I took.
Alhamdulillah. Now, you have studied a bit in the food industry. What has this taught you, and what are the main reasons, the main lessons you took from your studies, Zakia?
I have a whole 4 years of studying and a year in the industry working as a chef. And from this, I've learned that if you become a chef, anything is possible. Because a chef is something that you need to be flexible with, you need to be dedicated with, you need to be hardworking and accommodating at the same time. You need to be firm, but you also need to be able to show compassion and mercy. So I've learned to be a better person overall by becoming a chef, I'd say.
You're talking about becoming a chef, besides being a better person, besides what you learn, just for the benefit of the listeners out there, the sisters, maybe the young girls that, you know, thinking maybe I want to have a career as a chef, what does it entail?
It's something that I would encourage, becoming a chef, is especially to our young girls, because first of all, it instills the love of the kitchen in them, which us as Indian people especially, for us, the kitchen is the most important place of our home. Food is everything. It entails a lot of hard work. It entails sacrifice. It entails dedication. And if you can sacrifice a lot, you can dedicate your time and you work hard, go for it. It's something that you won't go wrong with.
Mm-hmm. Do you need certain subjects to become a chef?
No. As long as you have a matric, it's fine. They'll accept you into culinary schools. But yes, if you're a person that does not like maths and science, then chefing is maybe not for you, because being a chef is not only about cooking. It entails a lot of maths and science.
Mm-hmm. How many years' course is a chef?
2.5 years of studying and 6 months of internship in order for you to complete your diploma.
Mm-hmm. And I think for those who are, you know, very much interested in baking, desserts, cooking, and you want to study further, then I think becoming a chef is a good career as well.
If you have a different career option that is your first priority, but you still enjoy cooking and baking and being in the kitchen, a lot of the chef schools offer you skill programs where you can learn all the basics of being a chef, but you don't make it your career.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an option.
Okay, let's come back to the topic on today's program. We look at food contamination. Why is it an important topic to discuss? I think because, I'll give you my answer as well, because we sisters, we mothers, we daughters, we every day in the kitchen. Kitchen is part of our lives. We have to cook and feed our families as well. So why is food contamination such an important topic to basically discuss?
So in our homes, food contamination is something that we need to make ourselves aware of, because it's basically hygiene and safety standards that protects our families from picking up food poisoning and such on illnesses that cause us harm. Mm-hmm. It's also good to make ourselves aware and educate ourselves on this topic, because going out and eating, and like you said later on in the program, we're going to talk about the halal friendly, which we don't agree on. Cross-contamination is the downfall.
Okay. Working in the kitchen, how easy is it for food to get cross-contaminated? You're going to take us through all that, Zakia.
It's so easy that it's something that happens subconsciously. It happens within a matter of seconds. For example, in our kitchens at home, maybe because we're not vegetarian eaters only, we'll find maybe our granny is using the same spoon to mix the vegetable tarkari and the chicken curry and the mutton curry. That's cross-contamination. In the hotel industry, it's the same thing. So when service is happening, or when the kitchen's under pressure and we have a full restaurant and we need to get our dishes out to our clients, that's also when your cross-contamination happens at a 99.9%. Because we're under pressure, we have so much to do, we're not taking consideration of what we're doing. We have a spatula in our hand. Oh, well, you can use the spatula to lift the chicken fillet. You can use the spatula to lift the fillet of fish. You can use the spatula to pick up your shank of lamb, and we need to plate it. Okay, fine. You need to get the work done. You're subconsciously using that one spatula for all three dishes, which causes cross-contamination, especially with the halal and the haram issue, because, say, you're ordering a fish dish and the meat is not halal. Here the chef in the kitchen says, no, it's fine. It's everything on the dish is vegetarian, so you can have it. But in the kitchen, they took that spatula that they used to pick up the fillet of chicken. They used that same spatula to plates your piece of fish on your plate. So it's cross-contamination, which makes that dish now not halal to eat. So that's where also our halal friendly and not halal friendly comes in. So there is no such a thing as halal friendly. Speaking from a point of view where I've worked in a halal kitchen and I've worked in a non-halal hotel and also studying in a in an institute that is not Muslim run, because the staff are not Muslim and because everything in the kitchen is not halal, it becomes very difficult for the staff to be completely considerate to say, you know, that's a Muslim customer, they're asking for a halal dish. We need to be considerate, we need to take out new equipment, we need to take out new clean spoons and spatulas and pans to prepare their dish, which in the kitchen people are not conscious about. Yes, in our kitchens at home it's a different story because everything in our kitchens are halal. But in the restaurants, in your hotels, this is not something that is normal to them. For them, it's first of all something that's very hard to understand, firstly. And secondly, when they're under pressure, they don't take into consideration all of these things. So they feel that they're giving you a dish that's completely vegetarian. But me being in the kitchen behind the scenes, I know cross-contamination happens. So, for example, you've ordered a vegetarian dish. In the vegetarian dish, we use vegetable stock. But when our stocks are being prepared, in the kitchen, our vegetable stock, our chicken stock, our fish stock, our beef stock, all is on one station being prepared. And the person that's preparing it takes one spoon and skims all your stocks with the same spoon. So the spoon that went into your beef stock, which was made with your haram beef, is now being used in your vegetable stock. So the haram cross-contamination happens. So therefore, there is no such a thing as halal friendly.
Interesting, yes, certainly. Definitely, definitely. I think last year sometime I also interviewed a chef and she said there is no such a thing as halal friendly. It's either halal or it's either haram.
I totally agree.
Yes, certainly. Okay, let's go for a short break. When we come back, we'll be talking about, you know, when you're shopping for your meat, your seafood, your chickens as well. We're going to be talking more about putting your food in the fridge, about throwing out your food, how best to throw out your food, when preparing your food, how to keep your workstation clean, cutting boards, marinating foods, fruits and veggies. And we're going to talk about all that as well. And you're welcome to WhatsApp us any of your cooking or baking questions or concerns on 0727861548. Stay tuned. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. Well, we've got Chef Zakia Tagari who's in the studio with me and we're talking about cross-contamination. Now, Zakia, let's talk about, we've got lots of questions coming through here, but let's talk about when shopping for your meat, chicken or fish, what's the best way to keep it at the temperature it's supposed to be?
So when shopping, for example, if we're shopping here in Lens and we know we have to go to multiple different stores, keep your butcher as your last stop so that the temperature of your meat or the fishery for your fish stays as long as possible from your trip from the store to home. And as soon as you get home, ensure that that's the first thing that you pack away. While shopping, when it comes to your fish, always look for fresh fish. How do we look for fresh fish? The color of the eyes, it needs to be shiny and bright and not dull. The texture of the scales, it needs to still be like fresh and firm and on the fish. And obviously, yes, fish does have a smell, but obviously it shouldn't have a bad fish odor. It should have that normal healthy fish odor, then you know that your fish is a good healthy fresh fish. When shopping for poultry, We don't want that slimy substance on the chicken. That, you know, if you leave your chicken in the fridge for a few days, or sometimes you buy chicken and it has the slimy substance on the top. That's not healthy. That means it's not fresh. Also, the color of your chicken must be like a nice healthy pink. It says that it's a fresh chicken. Mm-hmm. It was freshly slaughtered and it's in good healthy condition. So we must look for points like this. And if you know you're going shopping and you know it's a distance from home, etc., and you have fish or frozen produce on your shopping list, then take a cooler bag worth with maybe some ice packs in it. It does make a huge difference to keeping the quality of the product.
Okay. I think it would be advisable in summer. Not now, we haven't got cold days. Now it's going to get more cold days to come, so it's fine.
Agreeable, in especially in summer, the cooler bag and stuff. But also remember, it is very cold, but it's not cold enough to keep your meat or your fish or your frozen products too long in the car. The car has heat, obviously, from it being closed, etc. And the temperature dropping and picking up when we're putting it back into the freezer and keeping it too long in the car, etc., or traveling a very long distance, all these things are not good for keeping the quality and the health and safety standards of the product.
Okay, let's talk about leaving your food, your meat in the fridge as well, like your raw meat, your chicken, your seafood. Okay, if you're going to just maybe we're ordering our meats or chickens from the butcher, it comes frozen, you're putting it into the fridge, in the freezer, what's the best way to thaw it out?
So I know a lot of us do this, myself guilty as well, until I studied and I learned that how wrong it is and how unsafe it is to practice this. Normally, our mothers and our grandmothers and us as well, we'd put it in a bowl of water in the sink or next to the sink for it to thaw. This is not healthy because the temperature of the water brings down the temperature of the meat too quickly, which then activates the bacteria in the meat to start breeding. So the best way is we take our frozen meat and we put it in a bowl with no water and we put it in our fridge overnight to defrost with the temperature of the fridge being cold as it is and bringing down the temperature from frozen to fridge temperature slowly and allowing the defrosting process to happen. In this way, because its temperature is being controlled in the defrosting process, bacteria doesn't activate in the product.
For how long can you leave raw meat in the fridge?
Maximum 2 days.
Chicken?
1 day.
Fish?
1 day.
1 day. All right. Okay. Now, when it comes to preparing your food, I think this is quite important, you know. Let's talk about the utensils, the countertops, and then even about the cutting board, the knife and the knives, and washing your meat as well. Hot, cold water, soaking your meat up.
Okay. Very important one is, so I know we as Indian Muslim people, because our mothers and our grandmothers did this, we tend to do it where we take our meat and we soak it till it becomes white. But in actual fact, by doing so, we are only removing all the nutrients and the minerals and vitamins that's in the meat and that's good for us. By soaking it in water. Same applies with chopped up vegetables. If you leave it to soak in water after it's been chopped and sliced, you are deriving the vitamins and the minerals and the nutrients from it. So while we are eating it, there's nothing left in it. So the best thing to do is, number one, is we wash our meat with cold water because hot water starts the cooking process. Because it's changing the temperature of the product. And secondly is, you said how to? You wanted to know by soaking it?
By soaking it, yes.
So we don't soak it and we wash it with cold water. Secondly is when we are, also another thing, the older generation prefer wooden chopping boards. Wooden chopping boards are very unhygienic because it is a breeding ground for bacteria. Why is it a breeding ground for bacteria? Wood absorbs liquid and holds liquid in. It swells up and it holds the liquid in, and bacteria needs liquid as food, and it needs warmth, and wood is warm. So it holds the bacteria in, and bacteria grows in the chopping boards. A lot of people put their chopping boards into the dishwashers, which only helps the bacteria grow, because now you're giving it heat. Heat helps bacteria also grow. So the best chopping boards to use would be plastic chopping boards. Plastic is a durable substance that bacteria cannot get into and make itself comfortable and stay at home. Once you wash your chopping board, use your soap water and your warm water, and you wash your plastic chopping board, you are washing your bacteria away. So the best option in chopping boards would be a plastic chopping board. A lot of people like to use glass chopping boards, but glass is a safety hazard. One is you could chop too hard and your knife could crack your glass chopping board, which then shards of glass can go into your meats or your vegetables, which makes it unsafe to consume. There could be a chip on the glass chopping board, which also could have shards go into your food, or you could yourself get cut. So it's not the safest of an option. Plastic chopping boards is the way to go.
Right. And it's always important, you know, to wash your hands after each, whether you're cutting meat or chicken or fish. In between, make sure you wash your hands, keep your utensils clean, keep your workspace clean as well.
Definitely, one of your first rules that you learn in culinary school is clean as you go. Sanitize after every 15 minutes. Wash your hands after every 30 minutes. This is only to prevent cross-contamination. You could have bacteria from your vegetables that you, for example, your potatoes, you were peeling them, your hands were touching them, the sand from that's left on the peels of the skin of the potato. Now you go and touch your chicken fillet to use. We cannot see the bacteria that came from the sand on the potato skin onto our hands, from our hands onto the chicken fillet. So it's very important between different tasks to wash our hands, to keep on rinsing or wiping down our knives with sanitizers, wiping your chopping boards between all the different produce that you are preparing, be it. Doesn't mean it's vegetable, so okay, use one knife and one board. After you peel your potatoes, wipe your chopping board down. If you chop in your carrots and then you're going to go chop some lettuce, for example, wipe the knife in between. We don't know what unseen bacteria are on those vegetables that we get into the next lot of vegetables.
Okay, let's talk about marinating food. Is it a good idea to thaw your meat, chicken, fish, marinate it, and then freeze it up again? Give us some ideas on that. Is it safe to do that?
The most safe way to go about would be to thaw your meat, marinate your meat. While your meat's marinating, store it in the fridge so that if meat cannot stay at room temperature, it's too hot. It's a breeding ground for bacteria. So store it in your fridge, and then cook it. And once it is cooked, then refreeze it. But after it is thawed, once cooked, it needs to be consumed. It cannot be refrozen again, because now you are playing with the health, the hygiene of it. By thawing your meat, marinating your meat, freezing your meat again and thawing your meat, you are having greater chances of causing food poisoning, because you're playing with the temperatures of your food constantly.
Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at many mothers out there preparing food for their children who are in varsity, and staying away from home, what's the best way for them to go about preparing that food and packing it away as well?
So same rule applies. Well, I do that as well. I mean, we all get so busy in our lives, so we sometimes like to prepare ahead of time. Prepare your meal. Say, for example, you prepare in your roast chicken. You want a whole roast chicken so that you can have it over a few meals. Prepare your chicken in one pot, that's fine, it's cooked, everything. But when storing it for your kids, store it in smaller containers, in a plus minus portion size, what they will be able to eat and complete, because once they thaw it and they defrost it, you, by freezing it again, it becomes a health and safety hazard. So pack it in smaller portions and then freeze it so that they just take out one portion for that day or for that meal.
Let's talk about vegetables, okay? Early on, I think before we did the program, we were talking about vegetables. You give us such good ideas, you know. Sometimes you cannot prep your vegetables beforehand.
Right.
Okay, tell us why.
So, yes, you are prepping beforehand, but you're not prepping in the morning for the night. Prep in the afternoon for the evening, because the longer your vegetables are prepped and they laying in the bowl of water, or you have them on your plate and you have them cling wrapped, once a vegetable is peeled and a vegetable is sliced or chopped, you are deteriorating the quality of the product. You are losing some minerals and vitamins and nutrients. So you're not achieving what your aim is. At the end of the day, we eat fruit, we eat vegetables, we eat good quality meat. Not for the sake of only eating and enjoying food, but also because our body needs vitamins, minerals, nutrients for our own well-being as well. And by us having the vegetables chopped up and left out for hours before we cooking it, also the way we cook it, all of that, it depreciates the quality of the produce by not gaining the full nutrient value, which is not good for us. It's non-beneficial.
Okay. And, okay, we've got a question coming through here. This one says, okay, I would like to know if you in the culinary industry, how do you deal with handling the haram meat?
Okay, so when I was looking for a place to study, it was a very big issue for me with the halal and haram and the meat and the alcohol and stuff. So after a lot of research, I did find a reputable, internationally accredited institute that does not, they give you halal meat to work with. So irrespective of whether you're Muslim or not Muslim, all the students used halal meat. On the occasion where there was, say, haram meat or bacon, etc., I did not touch it. I did not work with it, and they respected that. Of course, in the industry, in the hotels and stuff, it's a little different. They're not so considerate, etc. So I would wear gloves where the meat would not physically touch my skin. And that's unfortunately your only option.
Okay. Another question coming through is, what's the best way to boil beetroot so that least amount of nutrients are lost? Good question.
Okay, so unfortunately, boiling beetroot for the least amount of your nutrients to be lost is very difficult, because by boiling it alone, you're depriving the beetroot of its nutrients. So the best advice would be you boil your beetroot with its skins on, and then you peel it. The liquid that's left from boiling, drink the liquid. Or pickle your beetroot in its own liquid with your vinegars and your salts and your sugars, etc., so that when you do eat the beetroot, you are getting some of that nutrients back from the liquid.
Okay.
Unfortunately, beetroot is very difficult.
Yes. Okay, a very good question coming through. In fact, I won't say a question, but advice. A survey was done a few years ago and tests were run. Wooden, if kept dry, sun-dried, had less bacteria than plastic. So the listener says, so I stopped using plastic ones. Interesting.
Okay.
Very interesting. Okay. Then we've got another one. This one says, what is your opinion on steak fillet being left to mature for 3 weeks? Is this healthy?
It's not the question of healthy or not healthy. Things have different experimental points, and that is just something that it's just a theory of experimentation as well, and it depends how it's been matured. In today's times, yes, we mature our beef, and we do it in a controlled environment, which entails the health and safety rules. So if you buy matured beef from a butcher, it's completely safe to eat because it was done in a controlled environment. It wasn't where it was. Doing it in our homes is a little bit more different because obviously we don't have the air-controlled environment, the temperature controlling points, etc. So from your stores, your matured meats that are matured off time periods and stuff, it's perfectly healthy to eat.
Okay, listeners, we've got Chef Zakia Takari in the studio, and you can WhatsApp us any of your cooking or baking questions or concerns, 072-786-1548. Okay, let's go for a short break. When we come back after the break, we're going to be telling you about, a sister wants to know, what's the difference between baking powder and bicarbonate of soda? So stay tuned for that. Assalamu alaikum and welcome back. Well, I've got Chef Zakia Takari in the studio with me, and we're talking about food contamination and cross-contamination. We even spoke about the different types of when your food goes off, what to look out for, how to shop, how to store your foods, your meat, chicken, fish. We even spoke about a little bit about the so-called halal friendly, but there's no such a thing as halal friendly. It's either halal or it's either haram. Okay, now let's go on to what's the difference between baking soda and bicarbonate of soda, Zakia?
Baking soda and bicarbonate of soda are the same things. Baking powder and baking soda is different because bicarbonate of soda and baking powder is different.
I meant to mention baking powder and bicarbonate of soda.
That's fine. So baking powder is a chemical that is used to as a rising agent, but does not require a particular substance to be added for a particular reaction. Whereas baking soda or bicarbonate of soda, as we know it, it's an acid. It's a chemical acid that requires a acidic liquid to give it the reaction it gives us as a raising agent as well. Baking powder makes things more lighter and fluffier, whereas baking soda, bicarbonate of soda, doesn't have that light and smooth texture afterwards. You use it in items that has a more rough texture, I'd say. Whereas baking powder is used in stuff like your cakes because you want that smooth, light, silky, fluffy texture afterwards.
Okay. Okay, this one says, hope Appa and the guests in the studio are well. Yes, we are well. I wanted to find out for brown rotis, which flour should be used, the brown wheat flour, or does it have to be nutty wheat, and what's the difference?
So from personal experience, I use normal brown wheat flour. I haven't made brown roti with nutty wheat flour, so I unfortunately cannot give you an answer.
Okay, I think if you're using making brown rotis, you can maybe go on to say 2 cups flour and maybe about 1 cup nutty wheat, or some people use brown bread flour.
A brown bread flour is also nice.
Nice, yes, okay. I haven't been making brown roti for a while. because I know no one's going to eat it at home, so don't waste my time making it. But yes, white rotis, okay? But again, everybody has a different way of making their brown rotis. Some people prefer brown bread flour, or using cake flour and a nutty wheat. So it depends how brown or how healthy you want your rotis.
I agree. Personally, I do the 1 cup cake flour, white cake flour, and 1/2 cup of brown wheat flour.
Brown wheat flour, yes.
That's just me personally.
And then if you're using nutty wheat, you have to sift it.
That would be obviously a personal preference.
Yes.
If they like the coarse
the
texture,
coarse
of,
texture
the,
yes,
of it.
Yes.
And if they don't like it, then you sift it.
Okay. Another question is, I don't want to take much questions now. We need to go into the recipe. So please could you tell me, where can I buy a sushi mat and the seaweed?
I've seen that Woolworths has sushi mats and seaweed. Otherwise, Yuppie Chef, there is a store in Sandton City.
Right. Okay, for that. Okay. Let's go to the recipe before we miss out the recipe for the listeners, your lovely lemon cheesecake recipe, Zakia. So please go ahead and share. We have some time left. Then we're going to just take more of your WhatsApp questions.
Sure. Okay, so for a lemon cheesecake, I like to whip up stuff that's very quick and easy and that can be done on very short notice. So I prefer the fridge cheesecake over a baked cheesecake. For that, we'd need a packet of 200 grams tennis biscuits. I take it and I put it into my magic mix with 90 grams of melted butter, 45 ml of caster sugar, and 5 ml of ground mixed spice. If you don't have ground mixed spice, then I put in some nutmeg. I mix it with the magic mix till it comes to a crumbly mixture. Then I place it into my, I use the cheesecake pans. So you can put it into whatever pan or whatever Pyrex dish, etc. that you're comfortable with. For the filling, I use a baking machine. You can do this by hand. I just like to look for things that has convenience for me. In my normal Kenwood baking machine, I would put in my cream cheese with my condensed milk, and I would beat it with a pedal attachment. In a separate bowl, I will use my halal gelatin with the cold water, and I will sponge the gelatin. Once it's sponged, I will heat it in the microwave. Then I will add this mixture to my cream cheese and condensed milk with some finely grated lemon rind and lemon juice and vanilla essence. Lastly, I will whip up your fresh cream and I will fold it into my filling mixture. And you will notice by doing this already, by the time you're done, your mixture is quite... it's like it looks already like it's set in, but it's not set. Put it into your or put it over your crust or into your molds, whatever you're using. Pop it into the fridge, and within an hour you have cheesecake. Demold it, and you can decorate it as desired.
Okay, JazakAllah for that. For the benefit of the listeners, the recipe is on our website. Go to radioislam.co.za. If we don't have access to internet, call Sister Faiza on 011-854-7022. Another question, Zakia. Is it safe to use wooden boards, wooden spoons for cooking, or is this also a breeding ground for bacteria?
Wooden spoons are a breeding ground for bacteria as well. Stainless steel and plastic is your best options. In a kitchen, use mostly stainless steel or plastic. Bacteria can sit on it, but once washed away, obviously is removed.
Okay. Another question. I'd like to know if you can chop up your onions in advance and store in the fridge.
You can chop up the onion and store it in the fridge, but like I said, say morning for cooking for the afternoon or afternoon for the evening, but not where we chop up an onion. We chop up onions enough today that we want to use after 4 or 5 days. Okay. That's unhealthy.
Okay. This one says for brown roti, best flour is brown wheat flour, 2 cups brown flour, and 1/4 cup white flour, oil, and make dough with boiling water. Jazakallah for that, sister. Jazakallah for sharing that. This one and the next one says, how do you prevent brown roti from getting hard? I mix white wheat flour and brown wheat flour, but how do you get them soft? You can't only use brown flour, then it comes out like paper. Okay, I think also, sister, you have to roll your rotis a bit thicker. And I think you would try adding oil into your roti dough. It'll come out nice. Remember when we, I think we did the whole program on roti. I got my producer to look into it. Oh, Mumtaz is listening to me, yes, okay. All right. Mumtaz, I hope you're listening. You can do a whole program on rotis, okay? This one says, is it okay to leave meat out overnight to defrost? As now in winter, it takes longer to defrost completely. Sometimes it's still frozen in the fridge. I agree with the sister.
I'd be contradicting myself if I say it's fine, because I know, obviously, following rules, it's not fine. Yes, I hear you, but it's better to leave it in the fridge without water to defrost with temperature.
Right, okay. Well, already 2 minutes to 11 o'clock. We've already come to the end of a lovely, informative, educative program. I've learned so much, Rakia. Jazakallah khair for joining us on the program, on today's program, coming and taking your time out, sitting in the whole program with me. And I'm sure most of the listeners have also learned so, so much. Jazakallah for the recipe. And please share with us your Instagram account. I think all the listeners are waiting for it.
Jazakallah for having me. It was only a pleasure. My Instagram handle is sax_sweetbake. And I do share recipes, not culinary level recipes, but more of your home-based and your dessert recipes, etc. I will be starting a new page soon with your culinary level recipes, which in future Sister Mara will share.
Inshallah, we can look forward to that and success in all your endeavors.
Ameen.
Well, from me, Amara, Jazakallah to my producer Mumtaz and Zakia. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.